This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Education is a top issue for voters heading into November elections, yet there are key education questions that are dividing voters along party lines. Republican leaders are promoting statewide private school voucher expansion, while Democrats, including Governor Evers, say it's time to raise public school spending limits and increase special education funding. Here on Newsmakers to talk about this are Jim Bender from the Wisconsin Coalition for Education Freedom and Dan Rossmiller from the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Thank you both.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having us.
Lots of challenges before schools this school year. Inflation, declining enrollment, student mental health, teacher shortages. If you were to pick one major concern, challenge for schools this year, which one would be the top one?
you've listed off a number of them. I think if I were to have to pick one, it would be the need to get kids caught up to where they would have been had it not been for now 30 months of pandemic disruption of learning. We're going to see state school report cards coming out soon, and I have a pretty good feeling they're not going to show what we would like them to show. The pandemic had definite effects on the amount of learning that occurred and the proficiency levels of our students. So we're going to have to work extra hard to get caught up. Now, some of those challenges that you mentioned, the teacher shortage and inflation, are making it more difficult for schools to operate tutoring programs, before and after school programs, because they need people to staff those programs. And many of these things tie together in different ways.
But Jim, do you agree, major challenge catching kids up?
Well, I think you got to kind of start from the baseline. And so when we talk about the pandemic and what its impact on education, it's not just the pandemic, it's what was the reaction to the pandemic. And what we saw in Wisconsin, like we saw across the country, was there was as much political science used in schools being open and mask policies as there was actual science being used. And so what you've seen is there are disparate measures across the state where many schools were open and many schools were closed. And for a large swath of students in the state of Wisconsin, it's not just getting caught up, it's getting back in the rhythm of being in school. It's having families being back in the rhythm of being in school, because for too many students, they had a huge break from actually sitting in a classroom. And so you don't just restart. You don't just throw things back in and they automatically pick up from where they left off. And the dynamic that's changed going into this year compared to pretty much every other year that we've seen is there is a skepticism out there amongst parents that say they are looking differently at education across all sectors, saying, is this in the best interest of my child? And that's a different dynamic that I don't think anybody has faced before. So there's going to be a little bit higher level of scrutiny on what's actually happening in the classroom, what's happening with public policy around schools and closing and other mandates. It's a different dynamic out there than we've ever seen before.
So speaking of public policy, tomorrow, which here is September 22nd, DPI Superintendent Jill Enderle presents her State of the Education address, and we expect that a lot of what she'll say will be highlighting key provisions proposed for the governor's executive budget. And we have some summary on the screen. It amounts to about $2.5 billion in an education investment, includes raising revenue limits, allowing school districts to spend an additional $350 per pupil in 2022-23, an additional $650 per pupil in 2023-24. This is for public school students. There are also per pupil aid increases, a $750 million increase in special education aid, and other funds for mental health, literacy, financial literacy, and school nutrition, and also some tools to address teacher shortages. Dan, is this what schools need? Does this address the problems that we're talking about?
I think it addresses many of the major problems, and just parenthetically note that the increases for voucher schools, for example, would be the same as they would be for public schools. So if you combine per pupil aid for public schools and the revenue limit increases, 2 years from now, schools would be spending $1,069 more per pupil than they're spending. Now, that seems like a large amount, but when you consider that inflation right now is running at about 8.3%, and schools have not received a revenue limit increase in 6 of the last 8 years, you begin to see why things are pinching a little bit. And so we think that the state superintendent's or the DPI budget proposal recognizes that. It is structured in a way that will incentivize districts to spend the federal money that's available to them in the first year. That money goes away in September of 2024. And the bigger increases in the second year to help them with the inflationary pressures that they're under. So we think that is beneficial. We also like the fact that the there's a big increase in special education reimbursement aid. Schools are reimbursed
$750 million over the biennium.
It would take us from about 30% reimbursement level to 45% in the first year and 60% in the second year. That would take it about to where it was when I first entered the Capitol in the late 70s. The legislature used to put it in statute that it was going to provide 60% or thereabouts, and over time they kept missing that mark. They would change the statutory figure to a lower number. Finally, they stopped putting it in the statutes because they weren't hitting the mark. When we went to two-thirds funding, the state was providing about 45% reimbursement, and that has gradually gone down to the 30% we're at right now.
So the budget includes badly needed investments, is like when I'm hearing
you
say.
What that means for schools is that every dollar of increased special education costs, and special education costs have been increasing faster than overall costs, when the state doesn't provide reimbursement that keeps pace with those increasing expenditures, schools have to transfer money from their regular education programs to cover the mandated special education services that must be provided to students with disabilities. That means that they face choices of either larger class sizes, cutting programs, or going to referendum to maintain their programming and staffing.
Hey, Jim. So 800,000 public school students, approximately 49,000 or so students attending private school on vouchers. What's missing in this budget, or are you supportive of what you're seeing so far?
I think generally the difference between the past and the future is the conversation right now that's being had amongst some advocates is large buckets of money getting put into an existing system. And it's never combined with what's going to be done differently, what's going to change. If you give us this more money, here's the better results that we're going to get. There's never any connectivity between increased investment and results. And the legislature has been controlled by Republicans for a decade, and it is likely they're going to be controlled by for another decade. And that seems to be the questions that we're getting, is if you're going to invest more money, what are the changes that you're going to see from investing more money? Yes, clearly inflation is affecting everybody, not just schools, but affecting everybody. I think there's a legitimate case to be made that expenses have gone up, clearly. But when you're talking about this level of money, I mean, you're talking $800 million into equalized aid. Yes, we have a surplus, but that's still a really large investment. That is money that is, technically it goes to lower property taxes, but it's undefined money. It's unrestricted funds. You can do with it what you want. And there doesn't seem to be that connectivity, especially after everything we've been through, is to say, here's the problems that have popped up in the last 2 years. Here's specifically how we're going to change and our operations in order to do it. Also, when you look at Wisconsin and you look at the private school voucher program, still a majority of the students are in Milwaukee. Yes, it's statewide. They're out there. But nearly 30,000 kids are in Milwaukee, which is a majority of the kids that are in the program. And when you're looking at academic performance in Milwaukee, so when you're talking about a large sum of money, well, you know, 20%+ of that automatically goes into Milwaukee because of the size of the district. And when you're looking at the academic outcomes, or you're looking at a district that was closed for almost all of the, you know, 2021 school year, where private schools in Milwaukee were open, neighboring district schools were open, suburban schools were open, but MPS was still physically closed for an inordinate amount of time. Legislators and others are looking at this as, we see sector in Milwaukee where you've got high-performing private schools and independent charter schools and a district that was closed for a long time. Every dollar they're throwing in has 20 cents of it going into that system. That's there's got to be something that's got to give on a targeted standpoint from we're going to put the money in, what are the results we should get on the back end?
So, you know, continuing on the conversation of funding, in July, the Wisconsin Policy Forum was looking at a comparison of Wisconsin to other states. Wisconsin's spending on education ranked 25th highest among 50 states, and in 2002, Wisconsin had ranked 11th. The report authors say that the decline in spending is related to a lot of the efforts over the last several years to limit property and income taxes in Wisconsin. So what is your reaction first to that ranking of Wisconsin's level of spending on education?
Well, education funding is political, and Jim just outlined some of the ways that it's political. But the fact of the matter is that schools have been having to do more with less for many years. We developed a chart, which I don't know that you're going to be able to show, but compared to where schools were before the Great Recession hit in 2008-09 school year, we're about $3,000 per pupil below the level of spending we'd have been at if the legislature had maintained the inflationary increases it was providing. So when you ask what are you going to do differently, The challenge has really kind of been how are you going to continue to operate as best you can in that level of with that level of underfunding and having to do more with less.
Now that's do you agree schools are underfunded?
Compared to what? I mean, we can show national rankings, but currently 40% of kids are proficient in reading or less, and 40% of kids are proficient in math or less. The question isn't how much money you're putting in, it's what are the results that you're getting for the money that you're investing.
Well, some of the results for choice students are similar or lower in terms of proficiency statewide.
Not when compared geographically. When you do statewide, sure, if you take Milwaukee and compare it statewide, you're always going to see discrepancies. But in Milwaukee, when you look at the statewide report card right now, if you compartmentalize high-performing seats by exceeding expectations or significantly exceeding expectations on the statewide report card, apples to apples in Milwaukee, 23% of the students in Milwaukee public schools are in a seat that's considered high performing, exceeding or significantly. 62% of the students in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program are in a seat that is exceeding or significantly exceeding expectations. Now, consider that the student that's sitting in a voucher is getting about 60% of the funds that a student in MPS, and yet they have nearly three times as many students in high performing schools. So more money, but more money for what? If you're showing higher performance in Milwaukee at significantly less dollars, and you're talking about investing into a system, aren't you going to invest in a system that's getting you a higher return on investment academically? That's from a public policy standpoint that what you're doing. If your conversation is always, we should have gotten more, let's give us more now, but you're not asking the question, okay, but what are the results that you're getting on the back end? It's a disjointed conversation. Now, it's designed to be that way. They want that conversation to be,
how do you respond
you're not
to that,
paying.
Dan?
Well, Jim wants it to be disjointed as well. when you, this is where education funding gets complicated. And when you start breaking down what public schools spend and what private schools spend, public schools are responsible, for example, for transporting private school students. So every time a private school student is bused, that is on the public dollar.
Via the Constitution, and they get money for that. That's why. They're all taxpayers. Well, we can't refer to private school kids as those that are not taxpayers.
We're not debating public versus choice. They were talking about
they get some money for that. But on average, schools are reimbursed less than 9 cents on the dollar for their transportation costs through transportation aid. So it's not apples to apples necessarily. Public schools are also responsible for providing special education services to students. Private schools that participate in the voucher program are only required to provide those services that they're able to provide. If they can't provide the specialized services that special needs students need, then they end up in the public schools. And they're statewide, I think it's around 13 or 14% of our student population has special needs that need to be addressed. I mentioned that the state is not reimbursing that. There's about more than a billion dollars statewide in expenditures for services for special needs kids that isn't being reimbursed by the state, and that is where the transfer of money comes. So there are some significant differences in the services that are provided.
We don't have a lot of time to talk about it.
And he's true, but a lot of that is driven by federal law. So federal law dictates a lot of the special ed we're talking about here, and one of the state funding problems initiates from really a lack of federal funding, because a lot of the mandates that come down are from the feds and separate. So the money and the responsibility does fall on the public schools. The private schools don't get the funding or the legal responsibility to do it. That's a clear his point is clear on that. And the state investing more money in that, in essence, is really kind of covering for inadequacies from the federal government, because they're funding at even lower percent, and they're the ones that drive a lot of mandates to it, so it does fall onto the state.
If you want to link arms and go tackle this problem at the federal level,
on the feds to provide more flexibility for that, I think that there's been an attempt to do that. It just, for some reason, the feds, no matter who's in control of what party is in control, don't increase their special ed funding.
Let's talk about public support for education funding. Marquette Law School poll just came out a couple weeks ago, last week maybe, showing 51% of Wisconsinites support an increase in spending on public schools, while 41% of registered voters say it's more important to reduce property taxes. I think what's interesting here on this question and what we're showing on the screen is a significant partisan split on this issue, with 69% of Republicans in support of prioritizing property tax relief compared to just 12% of Democrats supporting that, where Democrats 85% support increased school funding. What is your reaction to that sort of partisan divide on this issue of investment in public education funding?
I think that's a trend that probably would show up if you went back in time. It may be a little bit exacerbated or the gap might be wider this time. There's been a fair amount of advocacy efforts, concerted efforts to question schools, to from national sources and within the state. So I'm not surprised, and most of that has been directed at conservative-minded people. So I'm not surprised that we see that kind of a difference. I know that within my own family, the people who are most conservative are those that have the most property and therefore pay the most property taxes. So they are concerned about that.
What do you think about that result?
I'd be interested to know in the past, because that number to me, compared to previous polling, this number seems low. I don't know if that's a Republican drop or a combination of both. But in the past, you have seen, if you ask questions, having done a lot of polling, you used to do a lot of campaign work. So when you run polling, when you ask a question like that's phrased, do you like your local public school and your children are in that school, you're much more likely to say yes. So when you ask that question, much like do you like your own congressman? Yeah, he's a pretty good guy. Do you like Congress? Congress is terrible. Do you like public education in general? Not so much. How about your local school? They rock. They're great.
This question might not.
Sometimes those questions aren't very conducive. But I will say, probably to Dan's point, I think when you look at the politics of it, when you look at Glenn Youngkin in Virginia and some of the national things that have said, this real divide, I frame it this way. It comes down to a basic question. Do you view public education as an extension of government, or do you view public education or publicly funded education as an extension of parenting? And what's the role of the parent? When you talk about parental transparency, when you're talking about provisions that parents want to see what's going on in the classroom, if you feel like there's friction, that the parent is not the ultimate arbiter of what's going on in the classroom for their own children, you start to get quite a bit of friction between what's going on from the education provider, whether that's public or private, and the parent. And the role of the parent in education, like I said before, that's a different dynamic that we've seen before. I think that poll question is reflective of that. Some of the things that the Wisconsin Coalition for Education Freedom, that's what we're about, is getting more targeted funding, obviously, for the parental options that are out there. But parental transparency and student transparency is a big part of that. Now, we can talk about, there's been different bills brought forward. Some of them are good, some of them not so good. But from a transparency standpoint of what you should know, I think there's a little bit of that that's driving that poll question.
The Marquette poll also asked voters their opinions on voucher schools themselves, and the results have been pretty consistent over time. Would you favor or oppose expanding the number of students using publicly funded vouchers to attend private schools? 46% of those polled support expanding limiting the number of students attending voucher schools, and those who oppose 45%, relatively unchanged from a year ago. It's no secret that Governor Evers has not supported expanding the school choice system earlier this spring. As you both know, he vetoed an expansion bill. But his opponent, Tim Michaels, and many candidates for the legislature are promoting statewide school choice. Do you see this as a key election issue for all voters?
I don't know if it's a key issue for all voters. It's probably a key issue for some voters. And Jim's laid out a number of, I think, probably well poll tested points. Let me say this. We're seeing a shift in the composition of local school boards. Part of the reason for having local school boards is that they're elected locally to reflect local values. And as local values shift or as certain things become emphasized over others, we're seeing a shift in school board members. So I don't know that this is going to be a long-standing type of thing. It's very hard in education to impose one-size-fits-all kind of mandates and have them fit local situations. We are a local control state, and I think that's part of the dynamic. Now, in terms of what's important for voters, I think it depends on you know, where they fall on that spectrum and whether they've been motivated or moved by some of the arguments about transparency, about parental involvement, about parental control, in some places more than others. So,
do you think education as an issue will determine who someone votes for this November?
I believe the polling shows that not only here in Wisconsin but nationwide, that education is playing a much higher role than it's ever played before. You're talking about these conversations in the heat of you know, 40-year increase in inflation. So you're not going to replace the pain that people are feeling either at the gas pump or in the grocery store, because that's very real and that kind of punches you in the face every day. But the education issue, and I think that role of parents in education, is playing a very high role. Much of the polling that we're seeing shows an increase in support for all sorts of education options. Because I don't think we're talking to limit it to just the private school choice conversation, I think, is a little bit much, because I think what you're seeing in other states and what you will see in education in the next 10 years are things that go well beyond what we're talking about now.
Open enrollment,
micro schools, Prenda. There's all sorts of different ideas that are out there. And really what COVID did and the shutdown of schools and parents trying to find some other things, you saw micro schools get started. You saw people try to find alternatives to what was happening because just staying home with their children wasn't working. And so that really sparked a bit of a renaissance of thinking around education and what the expectations of parents are coming back. And I think that's as difficult sometimes for private schools as it is for public schools, that you're now trying to meet a little bit more of a diverse need out there. So going forward, I believe education is playing a huge role here. You can see, if you watch TV at all, you'll see that that's, if you're watching the TV ads in September and October, somebody thinks it's important. So, you know, we're seeing that right now, that it's playing a pretty large role in what is going to determine, I think, the next governor.
You know, enrollment in choice schools has been rapidly increasing, as you've talked about. And for the most part, choice schools are funded through an aid deduction to the public school where the student resides. The governor and the public school advocates have said Wisconsin cannot afford to continue funding two separate school systems. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, I do agree. I think it's a challenge. It's a tremendous challenge. The question is, if you take all of the income limits and you take all of the enrollment limits off the school choice program, the voucher program, how do you pay for those? How do you supplant or replace the money that parents are paying in tuition for their students to attend private schools? That money's got to come from someplace, and it's going to come from the state, either in the current system or perhaps some kind of direct payment. We've always had divergences or differences in the way the voucher systems were funded. Milwaukee is funded very differently than the statewide system. In fact, in Milwaukee, we are moving actually toward
state GPR
funding directly and moving off any kind of property tax impact. Right now, the statewide program has a huge and growing property tax impact, and if you suddenly take all the limits off under the current funding mechanism, you're going to see a big property tax impact. And we can argue...
DPI did estimate a $577 million impact on property taxpayers if the program was, the voucher program was expanded statewide. I know you've written that you think that estimate is inflated, but do you think that the fundamental way that choice schools are funded needs to change in order to limit impact on property taxpayers?
I believe it will. I know we're having a lot of conversations now with key stakeholders and others about a simpler method to do that, that eliminates a property tax burden. And I think that will be one of the proposals brought forward to the next administration, is to figure out a way to do that. So it's not, and like many of these programs, Milwaukee started 30 years ago, Racine came in, it had one funding mechanism, the statewide program came in. If you were starting from scratch, you wouldn't design it the way that it is. It got cobbled together over time. And so it's really time, I think, to create a single system that works more efficiently. But the bigger issue that we have on the growth front is not from an enrollment standpoint. We already have a situation where demand exceeds supply, and that's been true since its inception. The legislature doesn't determine how many students can go in a school choice program. Parents make that decision. They can allocate space all they want, but if parents aren't volunteering to go into the program or schools aren't volunteering to participate, it doesn't grow. So there's been parental demand that's exceeds supply till now. The problem is when you're funding a voucher, regardless of some of the other cross traffic on transportation and special needs, you're still at a significantly lower amount per pupil in funding for a voucher. So $8,300 for K-8, only $9,000 for high school. Right now, every high school that's in the parental choice program is at most 50% voucher because they have to fundraise for every student on a voucher because they're spending $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 a kid.
Changing the school choice funding model to pull from GPR fix that problem?
Well, that's one mechanism is where you get the money, how much you put out. Clearly, we'd be asking for a significant increase as well. I think that's going to go along with it. But we have a huge gap that we're trying to close, not to increase on this end, but to try to close the gap because our costs are audited every year. So we know that the schools are spending significantly more than what the state has put in. And under current law, the school has to accept the voucher as full payment. So they have to go out and fundraise and use philanthropic dollars to close that gap. So you won't see a massive increase of seats because they're limited on how many seats they can have by how much fundraising dollars they can have. And that's a real impediment. There's a group of Lutheran high schools in Milwaukee right now that are in the program and significantly in the program. They need to raise $6 million a year to offset the cost of all the students that are on a voucher. So they can't increase their seats because they can't fundraise for any more than that.
So speaking of a funding gap, on the public school side, there are many schools going to referendum this fall on the November 8th ballot. We on our screen, it says 77. I think you told me just before the show, it's actually 78 schools, districts going to referendum. That represents 56 school districts asking either to issue debt, exceed the revenue limit on a one-time or recurring basis, and in total, taxpayers are being asked for more than $2 billion just through referendum. Does this show us a crack in the school funding system? Is there a need for reform on the public school side as well?
Well, I mentioned that schools have not had a revenue limit adjustment in six of the past 8 years. So there is pressure building in school districts for more revenue limit authority because the state hasn't given them that authority. It's always been true that school districts had to go to the voters to get approval for building projects to issue debt. So that's not new. And I think what we're seeing in many districts, much of the construction is either in districts that are suburban districts that are growing and having to build schools. I look around the Madison area, Verona built a new high school. Sun Prairie just built its second new high school in the past 10 years. Where there is growth, there is a need for new facilities. The other issue with regard to the debt referendums for building purposes is that many schools were built fairly hastily in the late 50s, 60s to meet the baby boomers, and those schools are now
getting old
and in need of renovation, repair, whatever. And so school boards and districts are having to make decisions about those older schools.
What about the operating referendum?
Well, the operating referendum, there of those 78, 40 are to exceed the revenue limits, and that's a reflection of local districts believing that they need more money To maintain their programs, to maintain their operations, to maintain their staff.
Yeah, some of the questions talk about raising teacher salaries mm-hmm. and doing other mm-hmm. sorts of basic work of in the building education.
And Act 10 did contemplate that school districts would be able to go to referendum to increase teacher salaries above a certain amount, above the CPI. Mm-hmm. And so that was always part of what was contemplated. When the legislature passed the last budget, inflation was running maybe 2-3%. Now it's up dramatically, and so.
So this is a sign schools are hurting.
Well, it's a sign that schools are struggling to meet their operational demands to pay their teachers and staff a market wage. They're all in competition with each other for those positions. They have to attract and retain people in those positions, and some are finding it necessary to go to referendum to be able to do that and to adequately staff their schools.
How do we're running out of time here, but I want to make sure I get to this question. How do you think the results of the November election will impact the state of education in Wisconsin?
So I think it comes right off this last question. What we have in Wisconsin now, after 2013, the biggest thing that's going to drive education in the next 10 years is we're not having very many babies, and the number of school-aged children is going down, down, down. So the number of publicly funded students is reducing, and the number of students inside the public education statewide number is going down. I mean, it's almost 50,000 less than it was in 2013, which was the peak. And so while there are certain areas, clearly, that are growing and growing very rapidly, most of the state is not. Most of the state is in declining enrollment. And we've got a 1950s, 60s style, archaic, we count kids on one day of the month where they serve pizza and one day of the month over here. Yet we have a computer system that knows where every kid is around the state every day, but we do things on a very 1960s style, methodical, three-year rolling average type of deal.
So if Tim Michaels is elected, do you think there'll be some big changes?
I think there's at least an opportunity to have those discussions. I mean, I think that you've got to modernize what you're doing. You had school districts locked in all over the states when the revenue limits went in at different numbers. I mean, you can have kids that are living across the street from each other in the eyes of the state be valued a couple $1,000 differently. Now you look at a child on a voucher and you've got three kids at $2,000-$4,000 in difference for their value as the state views them just because of where they live on a map or where their school resides. Well, that's not a modern way of funding education. And I think if we get somebody in there that's not as, I mean, you can't get more tied to the public education established with the Governor Evers. I mean, he's a child of it. He's come through it. Most of what we see today in public education was ushered in while he was superintendent. And so unless you make a change at the top, you're not going to really have a good way of doing it, because there's a lot of people right now that are vested in the system as it exists. And if you're trying to really create a modern system, there's going to be winners and losers in that, and the establishment is really loath to change. So you're going to need somebody to come in there and rabble-rouse a little bit.
What's riding on this election in terms of the state of education for Wisconsin?
Well, there's three things that can happen, and that will really determine the direction I think that things go. We're going to have a Republican legislature. That is clear. The question is, will it achieve a two-thirds majority such that it could override a governor's veto, whoever the governor is? If it's Governor Evers who's reelected, that's one set of probabilities. If it's Mr. Michaels who's elected, that's a different set of issues, and it will be very interesting to see what happens. I'm not
the
sure. I'm looking
forward.
The
agreement is kids need support, and we've fallen behind, and we have to make some progress. Would you agree with that?
Well, in essence, I think if you want to say we've fallen behind, I think we've fallen behind on any number of measures. I hate using just the funding measuring stick, because there are other areas, you know, that we've fallen behind as a state academically, which we should not be hanging our hat on. And I think if we don't change, not just you're talking about inputs. I mean, inputs are the establishment's favorite thing is talking about inputs. The thing they don't want to talk about are the outputs. What are the results that we're getting? We need to start focusing on what are the results we're getting for the kids.
Final word, let me talk
about inputs. You know, if you have a system where you can choose the degree of parental involvement you have with the students you're taking in, you're going to get better results. I think that much of what Jim talks about when he talks about parental choice reflects that greater parental involvement. Parents are making a decision. They have to affirmatively choose, to enter an independent charter school or a voucher school or whatever it might be. The kind of reform that I'm looking for, a couple years ago, back in 2019, we had a Blue Ribbon Commission on school funding, on which I served. And there were a number of reforms put forward by that commission that I think would have made improvements in the way that schools are funded statewide. Unfortunately, COVID derailed much of the consideration of those proposals in the legislature. I think it's time to go back and revisit some of those to make to address some of the funding fairness questions that Jim raised about, you know, differences between districts and between sectors.
All right. That will be the final word. I feel like we could have kept talking for another hour. So thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.